This week features an assortment of articles in the December 2024 Abolish Everything issue, where Reason writers make the case for ending the DEA, ICE, the Small Business Administration, and everything else. The next president should abolish everything. Written by Catherine Mangu Ward. Pick at random any three letters from the alphabet, put them in any order, and you will have an acronym designating a federal agency we can do without. This quip was true when Milton Friedman said it many decades ago, and it's gotten only more true over the many years that George Will has been quoting it in his columns and speeches. The Constitution laid out a clear vision for the role of the federal government, one limited in both scope and power. Yet the government has drifted far from this blueprint. Departments and agencies now exist that would be unrecognizable to the founders, despite trillions in taxpayer dollars and decades or even centuries of meddling. These agencies have hampered economic growth, violated human rights, and eroded civil liberties. They have somehow managed to make air travel more frustrating, education more expensive, and drug enforcement more violent. What follows is an idiosyncratic and non-exhaustive list of parts of the government that we could surely do without. We've left untouched some functions specifically mentioned in the Constitution. Hello, United States Postal Service, and confined our ire to the federal level. We also had to limit ourselves based on the amount of room in the magazine. There's no love lost for the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, but we ran out of pages. And we tried not to repeat arguments for abolition that we've made in the very recent past. We'd love to abolish NASA again, but we've made that case before. We aren't making the case for anarchism, at least at the moment, merely hoping to highlight that the federal government was never supposed to be all things to all people. It's time to take a hard look at which agencies have earned their place and which are long past their expiration date. Sometimes reform is the answer. Victories for liberty can be and are achieved through gradual change. But sometimes, especially when it comes to bloated bureaucracies of dubious constitutionality, it's better to simply abolish everything. Abolish the DEA. The DEA's attempts to enforce the nation's drug laws have been a resounding failure by pretty much any measure. Written by Jacob Sullum. In 1973, the year the Drug Enforcement Administration, DEA, was born, the federal government counted about 3 drug-related deaths per 100,000 Americans. By 2022, when the DEA had been waging the war on drugs for half a century, that rate had risen tenfold. That does not look like success, nor do trends in drug use. In a 1973 Gallup poll, 12% of Americans admitted they had tried marijuana. According to federal survey data, the share had risen fourfold by 2023, when the percentage reporting past year drug use was more than double the 1995 number. What about drug prices, which the DEA aims to boost through source control and interdiction? From 1981 to 2012, according to the Office of National Drug Control Policy, the average inflation-adjusted retail price for a pure gram of heroin fell by 86%. During the same period, the average retail price for cocaine and methamphetamine fell by 75% and 72%, respectively. In 2021, the DEA reported that methamphetamine's purity and potency remain high while prices remain low, that availability of cocaine throughout the United States remains steady, and that availability and use of cheap and highly potent fentanyl has increased. The DEA's attempts to enforce the nation's drug laws have been a resounding failure by pretty much any measure, except perhaps drug seizures, which can be expected to rise along with consumption and arrests, which send people to prison without bringing the agency any closer to achieving its avowed goal of dealing with America's growing drug problem. This is what the DEA calls the long, proud, and honorable tradition of federal drug law enforcement. The DEA has not only failed to make things better, it has played a key role in making things worse, even leaving aside the pointless incarceration of people whose only crimes consisted of exchanging politically disfavored intoxicants for money. Consider what happened when the DEA decided that doctors were overprescribing pain medication. The agency, along with its allies in government and the private sector, indisputably succeeded in reducing opioid prescriptions, which fell by more than half from 2010 to 2022. But that crackdown predictably drove non-medical users toward black market drugs, which are much more dangerous because their composition is highly variable and unpredictable. That hazard was magnified by the simultaneous proliferation of illicit fentanyl as a heroin booster and substitute, a development driven by prohibition enforcement, which favors potent drugs that are easier to conceal and smuggle. The upshot: The opioid-related death rate, which had doubled in the first decade of the century, tripled in the second decade. In 2022, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, counted more than 80,000 opioid-related deaths, nearly four times the number in 2010. Meanwhile, pain patients across the country suffered needlessly as the medication that made their lives bearable became increasingly difficult to obtain. The American Medical Association, the Food and Drug Administration, and even the CDC, which contributed to the problem by publishing guidelines that discouraged doctors from prescribing opioids, acknowledged the resulting human wreckage, including undertreatment, patient abandonment, and suicide. As demonstrably unqualified as the DEA is to prevent substance abuse, it is even less qualified to regulate medicine, which it does by setting production quotas, deciding who may prescribe controlled substances, and threatening prosecution of doctors whose practices it deems unacceptable. By itself, this interference, which harms patients without any countervailing benefit, would make the agency worthy of the chopping block. Without the DEA, who would strive to stop the flow of illegal drugs, as presidents have risibly promised to do for more than a century of prohibition? Maybe nobody, which would be an improvement when you consider all the damage caused by that doomed crusade. Abolish ICE. The Federal Immigration Agency disrupts communities and families for no good. Written by Fiona Harrigan. ICE's parent agency, the Department of Homeland Security, was created in 2002 in reaction to the previous year's September 11th attacks. The federal body tasked with handling all things national security was empowered via ICE to target and deport the country's largely peaceful population of undocumented immigrants, and ICE has operated as if those missions are two sides of the same coin. ICE has several sub-agencies, but its Enforcement and Removal Operations, ERO, component is both the largest and what most people think of when they hear ICE. Its mission is to find, arrest, and remove undocumented immigrants. In practice, that results in agents invading the personal and professional lives of migrants who have called the country home for years, are parents to U.S. citizens, and have contributed economically and socially to their communities, tearing all that apart over a long-ago border crossing or visa overstay. It is a militaristic mission that effectively turns nonviolent immigrants into fugitives. Presidents may set different guidelines for ICE's enforcement wing. Some presidents have prioritized the removal of violent offenders and people deemed national security threats, deprioritizing those without criminal records or with only minor charges. But President Donald Trump broadened ICE's enforcement mandate significantly, essentially making all undocumented immigrants targets for removal. Under those terms, ICE carried out controversial and mind-boggling enforcement activities against migrants who couldn't possibly pose a risk equal to the force used against them. There are countless such stories. An undocumented man driving without his license was bringing his pregnant wife to a scheduled cesarean section when ICE took him into custody. ICE fought to send Iraqi Christians back to a homeland where they feared persecution. It deported the caretaker of a six-year-old paraplegic boy. Far from just targeting undocumented immigrants, ICE has swept up people of all immigration and residency statuses. From arresting a longtime legal permanent resident who was tending his lawn to mistakenly deporting dozens of U.S. citizens. Those stories may ebb and flow from administration to administration, but the potential for abusive enforcement is always there. ICE has routinely shown itself to be an overreaching and unaccountable agency. Georgetown University's Center on Privacy and Technology found that ICE has scanned the driver's license photos of 1 in 3 American adults and could access the driver's license data of 3 in 4 American adults. The agency boasts a long history of impersonating police officers, abusing immigrants in ICE detention, and building a vast surveillance network of data purchased from brokers and other legally questionable means, reported Electronic Privacy Information Center counsel Jake Weiner. ICE's budget has steadily increased since the agency's creation in 2003, from $3.7 billion, $6.4 billion in current dollars, to $9.1 billion in FY 2024. The ERO's workforce has nearly tripled in the same time period, reaching 7,711 in FY 2024. It's worth asking tough questions about the return on investment, but few politicians are willing to do so because they largely view ICE as an indispensable tool. Many of the issues ICE purports to address would be better solved by overhauling the U.S. immigration system, The country's undocumented immigrants are overwhelmingly a benefit, not a liability. It makes far more sense to bring them out of the shadows by providing a pathway to citizenship than to use government force to upend their lives. Reducing the incentives that drive illegal immigration, such as expanding work visa pathways and streamlining visa and green card processing, would further reduce whatever issues ICE currently thinks it must solve. ICE is tasked with disrupting American communities and families at great cost and little benefit to taxpayers. Some important duties fall under its umbrella. There is a role for the government to play in detaining and deporting actually dangerous migrants, for one, but such things were handled before its creation, and they can be handled again by relevant law enforcement agencies. ICE's current powers and central deportation mission are neither appropriately sized nor easily reformed. It would be much better for the government to extend an olive branch to nonviolent undocumented immigrants, reassign ICE's useful functions elsewhere, and let the agency go once and for all. Abolish the Small Business Administration. Like all government perks, SBA lending creates unseen victims. Written by Veronique DeRuggi. Everyone loves small businesses, but that's no reason to keep an agency dedicated to extending loans and other privileges to some of them at the expense of everyone else. Contrary to common belief, it is not the role of government to subsidize private companies. This statement is true whether the company is green, minority-owned, small, or gargantuan. Besides, the fetish for small businesses is annoying. Small businesses employ 45.9% of American workers, according to the Small Business Administration, SBA. That sounds impressive until you realize that 99.9% of businesses in America are small. That means 0.1% of businesses in the country employ more than half of the workforce. The SBA is mostly useless. No doubt various businesses getting subsidized loans through the agency love it. If your enterprise can't get a loan because your business plan is subpar, an SBA guarantee will help convince a bank to give you cash, since taxpayers will cover much of the unpaid loan. Likewise, if you think market rates are too high and lenders' terms are too stiff, an SBA loan will lower your borrowing costs. But that doesn't mean the SBA is good for the country as a whole. The SBA boasts that its lending fills an essential gap for small businesses that can't access adequate capital. Leaving aside the silliness of believing there must be a market failure if not all companies that want a loan can get one, SBA lending is a drop in the bucket. Traditionally, the agency's loans have represented about 1% of all small business loans. Since it's so small, why should anyone care? Because, like all government perks, SBA lending creates unseen victims. Most industries that benefit from SBA loans are highly competitive. They include retail, wholesale, travel accommodation, and food service. As if the restaurant industry isn't cutthroat enough, some competitors benefit from lower borrowing costs than are available to others. In addition, SBA-guaranteed loans cover up to 85% of losses in case of a default, lowering the risk to lenders significantly. It gives banks an incentive to shift lending away from unsubsidized to subsidized businesses. The result is marginally higher borrowing costs for unsubsidized companies than they would likely face without SBA lending shenanigans. Taxpayers are victims, too. They shoulder the burden of SBA defaults, which have traditionally been about 1 in 6 loans. During the COVID-19 pandemic, the SBA shoved hundreds of billions of dollars in grants to businesses as a band-aid for government lockdowns. As a result, the SBA's budget ballooned from less than $1 billion in most years before 2020 to $33 billion in 2024. The main culprits for this expansion were the COVID-era Paycheck Protection Program and SBA disaster loans. It has been well established that most of the PPP funding went to companies barely affected by the lockdowns because they were well capitalized and their employees were better able to work remotely. There is also a long trail of evidence that the disaster program is a disaster. From Hurricane Katrina to the COVID pandemic and other disasters, the SBA has a history of failing at the number one thing small businesses need after a disaster: quick access to capital. Dealing with the SBA disaster loan program is horrific, according to many accounts and congressional testimony, and the system mainly benefits the wealthiest business owners who had a structure in place to administer the paperwork as well as an already strong relationship with a bank. Those owners could have done well without the SBA. Back in 1984, President Ronald Reagan's budget director, David Stockman, called the SBA a billion-dollar waste, a rat hole that benefited few small businesses while distorting credit markets. The SBA unfortunately survived an attempt to abolish it that year, and it went on to become the $33 billion waste it is today.